We're just okay and we play some movies. We're just okay.
Movie watchers.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Just Okay Movies. I'm your host, Werewolf Nards Biggie Size, and I'm here with...
Still a virgin except for that one time Guido.
Hey Guido, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's good to be back for another horror episode.
That is right. If you don't know already, this is our JOK... That's right, I almost said JOKG, Jesus Christ. JOKM Movie Horror Month. I think that's what we're calling it. Let's go with it.
Yeah, sure.
It's where we are... why not? We are reviewing a horror film for every week in October. Last week, we did It Follows, so definitely go check that episode out. I think it was a good one. It was a fun conversation. And next week, we'll be doing Nightmare on Elm Street 3. And then our final one will be the original Alien. But this week, I'm just going to cut straight to it because I'm pumped to talk about this movie.
Oh, and he's happy.
It is so good. The movie we watched was Monster Squad. And honestly, no bullshit, no joking. If we were still kind of rating movies, which I think we're going to just kind of do away with because it was just... Anyways, I'm going to cut that out. I'm sorry. I'm too pumped because I love this movie so, so much. It is so good. I would rank it up there in my own personal list of movies I could just sit down and watch anytime and would thoroughly enjoy it. I put it up there with like RoboCop and stuff, which is my like kind of go-to film, the sit and watch if I got nothing else to do. Like... And if I just want to have a good time, this movie is so good, and there is no way it would ever be made today. And that makes me so sad.
This is the first time you've seen it?
First time. Never heard of it until you all mentioned it.
So you're not even biased by that nostalgia factor like I am.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. And it really has a lot of stuff I don't like. First of all, I'm not a huge fan of horror films in general, so... Any horror film is already kind of a tough sell unless it's sci-fi or just a subject matter I'm interested in. It has kids. I'm not a big fan. Love kids in person. Hate them in film. And it has to do with a bunch of, you know, corny monsters. I'm like, that's just a mix of stuff I'm just not interested in. Especially when the kids are supposed to be like, we're tough little kids. We're going to step up and do it. But it is not... like that. Not at least not the stereotypical way. Like these kids are cursing. They are like fighting and shooting shit. Like it is just, it's what you would imagine you as a kid would do if this happened. And like you would be, you know, not holding back being like a complete idiot. It feels, I guess I felt like if I was in their position, I'd be doing the same things. And I was having so much fun watching them. And I'm not going to lie, even at the end, I got a little teary about the very end scene. It hit me, and we'll get to that point, but it just has everything you would want out of a film like this. It's got characters that you love. Honestly, you truly love them. The plot is not, it's not stupid. It is not a stupid plot, even though it's got the stereotypical monsters in it. It's actually a really fun and interesting plot. And some very, very odd subject matter in certain points.
I'm sure we'll get into that too.
there's several that I'm like, but there's just one that sticks out in my head that I was like, there is no way. I mean, and this is like, there's little things that still would be like, no way it would be in a movie today. And what is this movie rated? Is it PG-13? There's no way it's R.
It was rated PG-13, and I did a little research on it. It was a box office disaster. Like, it failed in the box office.
Goodness.
And 2 weeks after that, The Lost Boys came out, which is a box office smash.
Right.
And they're both kind of along the similar lines. The only thing is, like, the Monster Squad caters more towards a younger audience, while Lost Boys hits all the teen notes, you know?
Mm. And interesting. I've never seen Lost Boys.
It's strange because you haven't seen Lost Boys? Come on, Biggie?
I know, man. The more we dive into this hole, the more I realize how limited I've been in my viewing experiences.
The rating system back in the 80s was quite different than it is now. Sure. So this getting rated a PG-13, it was a lot harder back then. Just for instance, Temple of Doom was PG-13, where there's a guy pulling a heart out of a chest. And Beetlejuice, which is fucking has so much creepy imagery and adult tones, was PG.
Yes. Really? So, it was PG?
Yes. So,
wow.
Going to see this and having to see a PG-13 movie when you're around the age of 10 was, parents didn't let kids do it because it was a new rating, and the parents were like, well, it says PG-13, you need to be 13, and that was pretty strict on that. A lot of families were. So it's a odd rating for what is essentially a kid's movie, but it hits it. It's such a weird movie because it hits so many different elements of just of being more than just a kid's movie. There's a lot of dark scenes in this movie, but at the same time, they're gallivanting around with fucking Frankenstein during a montage, you know? So it's all over the board in terms of tone. It's a weird movie. It's a result of late 80s filmmaking, I guess.
Oh, definitely. No, it is just completely fascinating what all is in this treasure trove of a film that just makes me smile at many times. One time in particular made me kind of almost cover my mouth in that how shocked I was. It was in this film, and I felt terrible that I felt that way. Because you're right, 10, 20 years ago, maybe it wouldn't have batted an eye. And you definitely kind of, it's hard not in these days to kind of have those PC shades on and look at stuff. And it's tough to see things 20 years ago because you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. Who's going to be offended by this? And there's quite a few things in this film that could be offensive, but it's handled in such a good way that it felt genuine and not meant to be in any way offensive. And I think that's what I love so much about the film. It felt so genuine in its creation. And on top of all the sets, no CGI, there's some, backdrop stuff and things like that where they're transposing images in. It definitely, those scenes look very dated, but that's the tech they had then. But like actual like cave scenes and all these really neat looking sets and the costumes, other than Dracula's being a bit too cartoony, but that's okay. But like the monster costumes look so good, especially mm-hmm. the swamp creature from the Black Lagoon. I guess that's who he's supposed to be. Looks so good.
Yeah. So should we give him a little premise of the movie?
From how good this movie is, I would definitely say we need to give a little bit of detail.
Okay. It's tough.
It is. We'll probably struggle and jump around a little bit because a lot happens. And it's. I could see us having a hard time capturing just how good and odd some of these scenes can be. So it may sound a bit random. But let's go for it.
It doesn't make sense. There's quite a bit of it that's not entirely clear. It opens up with like 100 years in the past from 1987, so 1887, I guess. And there's some monster hunters that are fighting some Dracula girls, some vampire women. And they have a girl come up and read off of a scroll, and it makes an amulet glow, and then it opens this whirling vortex that sucks everything in. And that's how they introduce the movie. And there's no exposition to that. Like, there's no one saying why they're doing what they're doing. And then it goes to modern times, and all of a sudden, there's movie monsters. These are universal movie monsters, namely Dracula, who are in an unbeknownst location that has swamps and also like palm trees. And it's a weird location. You think maybe California? But
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It looked good, but it was a little odd.
And Dracula is just kind of there, and he is up to nefarious deeds, and these kids, a group of kids, catch on to what's going on, and they decide to take it under their own. They need to stop these monsters, and because for their reasoning of no one's going to believe them.
Right.
And they're right. No one's going to believe them. And they get into all sorts of hijinks. They fight Dracula. They fight the mummy. The gill monster. It's not really Swamp Thing. It's just like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Wolfman, which is my personal favorite in this movie. Oh, and Frankenstein. And it ends with a similar scene from the beginning that I explained. So that's the very general premise of the movie.
Yes, it is. Now we get into the flavorful stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, the characters, especially the two main boys, who's one of them's kind of he's definitely the leader. The other one's a bit of the follower. And they love monsters. Like, that is their passion above all else. And they kind of have this club. And, let's see, one of them, their younger brother's a part of it. The other one, I guess that's their younger sister. I can't remember their names. They kind of want to tag along and do stuff, too. And every one of them is really, really good. They fit a very specific stereotype. And that's fine as long as they're good. And I loved all four of them, and the little beagle. He's just a cutie pie, so they have a little dog that follows them around, too.
Right.
But I have to say, that little girl just stole my heart through the whole thing. She was just wonderful. She's just very kind cute. Of a tough, very cute, no-nonsense. She calls him a chicken shit at one point. Like, it's just like, you are wonderful, and I love you. And but all of them are that way. I mean, even the leader, you know, he's kind of stereotypical. When you still root for him, you kind of like him because they're not really dumb, you know? They kind of do some silly stuff at times, but everything they follow is very, you know, follow and set rules that they know about monsters, and that makes it entertaining.
Yeah. And there's one, like, the performances are pretty okay for a bunch of kids.
Definitely.
With the exception of maybe the fat kid, who wasn't the greatest actor, but he served a role and he did it, and that's okay.
He was lovable.
But there's one point where the main kid, the head of the monster squad, gives this rousing speech in the treehouse that they all gather in, and it was like an actual powerful performance from this fucking 13-year-old kid.
Yeah, seriously. Like, at this point, you know what's going on, and I was kind of just like, fuck yeah, let's do it. This is great.
Yeah. But going back to the actual setup, like, so there is this vortex thing. Basically, Dracula wants to end the world. And he does that by getting an amulet, that's in this, for no reason, unknown location, Sedona, let's call it. And he wants to open up a vortex that's gonna destroy the world. And the kids catch on to this, but there's no, like, explanation as to what the amulet does. Why it's in the location that they're in, because they were fighting Van Helsing at the early part of the movie, which I assume is somewhere in Germany or something, Transylvania. and somehow all these monsters end up in America.
Yes. The only thing we're given, and it's tiny, it's not probably not even worth mentioning, is they were hauling some of them on a plane, and then Dracula breaks them out, basically. And that's kind of all we're given, and they just fall in that lagoon area where that kind of comes back up later in the film. That's pretty much all we know why they're there.
Right. And then I'm not entirely clear on the motivations of Dracula, like... I know it's a kid's movie, it's Dracula, he's bad, he does bad things, but you're watching it and you're like, but why? Like, why does he want to end the world? Doesn't he need humans to feed off of? And, like, I get it, he's evil, but I don't know. It just leaves this blank area, and that's one of my criticisms of the movie. Watching it as an adult, as a kid, I didn't care. Like, I got it. And maybe that's the point of it, is Dracula bad, kids good.
Right. Dracula has a MacGuffin that does something that we probably don't want to happen, and we're now going to take it out. Yeah, it's the blandest plot ever if you just, you know, break it down like that. You've heard this story, at least in some shape or form in the past, and I would totally agree. And if the performances weren't there, if the set pieces and the pacing, hell, even the montage they do was probably one of the best montages I've seen in a long time. Because it didn't fuck around too much, and it was like, all right, this is cool. Except there's... Still, going back to some material that's a little freaky, the biker guy, the tough older kid making bullets in shop class.
Yes, bullets in school.
Ooh, yikes.
It's one of the few parts of the movie where you're like, ooh, this wouldn't hold up in today's... cinema.
Yes.
Another part is the kids very blatantly calling each other homo and faggots.
Oh God, that's right. At the very beginning, the poor fat kid, he's getting bullied and called a fag like four times. That shocked me a little bit. And I just was like, holy crap, this is a bit much. I mean, respect for going there just for, you know, building his character up a bit more, and he gets a good payoff later that's very violent as well. It's shocking. There's no way that would pass. Even probably in an R-rated film, it wouldn't pass.
Right. And if it did pass, it'd be something like Quentin Tarantino or something using those words as shock value. Not in a PG-13 children's movie.
Yes, exactly. You're not seeing this in a Disney film. Yeah, I totally agree. But I got to just jump into it. It's not too far off track. But like what we talked about, this film has a lot of those like kids coming together, the solve something tropes. And by far one of the most popular ones that we see in all kinds of films. You put like Sandlot and... sort like that, you got the creepy neighbor who, you know, everyone's kind of scared of. He seems a little reclusive. And in this case, he's German.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if they mention anything about the war, but just from the dialogue, it just felt like they were alluding that he could be a Nazi. Did you feel the same way, or... Was that just me interpreting it?
No, it was definitely. He was German, and the kids even said, like, is he a Nazi? And they're like, they had a conversation about who America is currently at war with. And
that's right.
The little girl's like, we're not at war with Germany anymore. We're at war with the Vietnamese.
Dude, I busted out on that. That was so funny. That's what made me start loving that little girl, is that was just some great dialogue. But they get this book that I don't think at the time they know it's... Oh, yes, they do know it's Van Helsing's diary. And there's a funny scene when he finds that out. And I'll talk about that in a moment. It's probably my favorite scene. And they're like, who do we get to talk, to interpret it for us? And then the German guy comes up and he's like, I can interpret it. Or he actually says one of the phrases that they say in German... or in English, and he says it in German. And that was cute dialogue. But this whole time, he's creepy, he's a German, he could be whatever, and they let him them in, and he's like has a knife. I love this scene. And it's kind of, the camera's in more of a lower position, so it kind of shows dominance, and he's got a knife. He's like, all right, who's next? And then he like bends down like, for another piece of pie. And he's like serving them pie in his room, in his den area. And when he sits down, there in the background is a menorah. And my mouth opened wide. Like, okay, he has a menorah. He's German. He's very old. And then one of the kids walks over to a replica of a B-17 bomber that he just has sitting in his den. And he's like, this is rad. I'm like, is that a B-17 bomber? Which, if you don't know, is the bombers that the United States used during World War II to take out German installations. And he's just talking about trying to help them. He's interpreting the diary of Van Helsing. And then he lets them go, and they're like, we're going to go after monsters. He's like, oh, I'm very familiar with monsters. He shuts the door. His sleeve kind of goes back, and he has a Holocaust internment camp tattoo of his serial number on his arm. And I started laughing, but it was a very uncomfortable laugh. Okay. I don't know how I feel about this scene. I'm happy it's here. I'm happy I've witnessed it. But there's no way in fucking hell this could be made. In fact, even the 80s, I'm kind of shocked. But it was so good.
We were watching this in Discord with a few people, which people should join up. I think we're doing them Mondays now. It's kind of the day to aim for. And I, like, when it cut to the inside the house, I remembered the tattoo. Like, I've totally forgot about it from watching it when I was a kid. And I said to them, I was like, he's gonna have a Holocaust tattoo on his forearm. And I said it in a way, and then I start laughing because it sounds like a joke.
Right?
And then sure enough, 5 minutes later at the end of the scene, it shows that Holocaust tattoo, and I just burst out laughing. And everyone's like, what?
I don't know if I felt that uncomfortable in a film in a while, because it just comes out of nowhere. I mean, up to that point, it just feels like a fairly typical but really good kid movie, and then you start throwing in World War II atrocities.
Yeah, and then also to mention, it's never brought up again in the whole entire film.
No, he shows up again, but he's never mentioned again.
Right. So it was like this weird scene of like, oh, all right, I get it. And then it goes back to the kids, you know, having a tea party with fucking Frankenstein.
Right. This film goes through some pretty interesting tone shifts. But this is one time, and I don't know if it just kind of fell in their lap or if it truly was intentional, but it works. You know, most times you need to keep to a single tone and not shift very much from it, because you run into some rough areas. That's movies we've seen in the past. But this film, I can't imagine it was all like 100% articulated like a Tarantino film or a Scorsese film where it's done correctly. That I think it just was a perfect storm. It all came together beautifully on top of just people who were really exceptional actors and could handle that content very well. And I think that's a bit of admiration I have for the film. Is how shocking just how complete it feels, other than a few little things here or there. There's a couple of scenes with Frankenstein when they're hanging out with him. Like, there's like this one scene where they're just like randomly walking together in the sunset and yes. Set the music. That was kind of random. Like, I guess I knew why it was there. It was kind of reinforced this, okay, you're not scary, you're our friend and we love you. It was just kind of an odd scene, especially when it goes way back to the kind of darker, sinister side of the film. So there's just stuff like that that kind of throws it off a bit, but by no means does it derail the film.
Yeah, it's just Frankenstein, Dracula brought him back to life in this awesome swamp scene. Like they pull, like he shows up in a swamp. Dracula does with his hearse. Dracula's driving, and he's driving a hearse. He shows up to the swamp, and the mummy and Wolfman come out of the sides of the screen, and they all group up, and then a casket starts raising out of the water. And who's lifting it? Fucking the creature from the Black Lagoon. There's thunder and lightning and smoke. The scene is filled with smoke, like practical effects of smoke. They brought like smoke machines and it looks really awesome. And they bring him on shore. Dracula brings out his cane, attaches two little clips to the bolts in Frankenstein's neck, who was in the casket. And holds up his cane and strikes it with lightning and raises Frankenstein from the dead. And then the next scene that he's in, Dracula says to Frankenstein, there's these kids and they have the diary of Van Helsing. I need you to go get it. And if they give you any trouble, kill them. And Frankenstein says, okay, I do things. And then cut to the little girl sitting next to a pond under their clubhouse or whatever. And there's no like fear. There's no attack from Frankenstein. There's no like scariness to it. He just kind of shows up. And then all of a sudden he's friends with the girl. Like he just totally ignored Dracula's commands and just became friends with this little girl. And it's one of the better parts of the movie, I guess. Or it sets up a lot because Frankenstein plays a big part in the ending of the movie.
Yes.
It really sets up that he's going to be friends with all these kids. And there's a scene... Lots of Frankenstein hijinks ensue. There's a scene where they're in the clubhouse talking about how they're going to defeat him. They find out that they need the amulet. And Frankenstein is with them, and he's looking through a camera that's aimed towards another house, and he takes a picture of a naked girl while he's wearing some shades.
An underage... naked girl, another area that's a little questionable.
Right. And later on in the film, they get a print of that, and Frankenstein is holding it. Yeah, well, they do blackmail her, but he's holding the picture up, and he's, 7 foot, however many, and he's holding it up looking at it, and all the kids are like jumping trying to get the picture from him, including like the little girl.
That's what they were doing. I couldn't figure out what they were jumping for. So he had the naked picture. Okay.
Yeah.
That was good. Even the dog, it was adorable.
Yeah, they were all jumping trying to get the naked picture, which they read in Van Helsing's diary that Dracula's planning to use the amulet to open up a vortex to end the world, and the only way to close the vortex is to have a virgin girl, I assume, read from a text, and it's all in German. They're like, there's this bit where they're trying to find out who's a virgin. And the only one that comes to mind is the girl that they took the picture of, and they bring her up to the clubhouse, set her down real nice, have the whole Harvey Weinstein layout.
Ooh, spicy.
And they're like, it's her brother. Like one of the kids is her brother. Yeah, and. Gross. Yeah, it's the brother and it's the really cool kid. And they're in the clubhouse and the cool kid's like, well, just ask her. What are you doing? And the kid's like, what we need to know, Jessica or whatever her name is, are you a murderer? he's like coughing and just can't ask his own sister. And then the cool kid is like, I forget what is it. He delivers it really well. But he says something along the lines of, like, we were just wondering, perchance, if you have or have not had the proclivity in which you have engaged in sex. And she's like, what? You're asking me if I'm a virgin? That's none of your business. And he's like, well, it is my business now, bitch. And he brings out the fucking naked picture of her. And he's like, I'm going to show this to everyone now, bitch. He doesn't really say all that, but it's a very, like...
It's not far off. He does a veiled threat of pinning it to the school board next to, like, cheerleader tryouts and the football schedule. And I'm like, damn, son, this is rough.
Like yeah, you're going to read this fucking ancient German text for us, or I'm going to show the whole school your tits. That's what it comes down to.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, on top of that, the dialogue is really good and really well written. Like, I mean, there's one fart joke, but it's actually well done. But there's not a whole lot of, you know, them saying like, oh, watch out for your nads, or oh, look at his nads. And, you know, there's like one growing kick and stuff. And so, stuff you would expect, but it's not like overdone. Like if you think of, I don't know, any kind of like kid sports movie kind of thing, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But one scene in particular, I love the joke and... I guess you call it the payoff, and I hinted to it earlier. When the main kid goes home, his mom says that she picked him up an old book that was about monsters, and she's like, I think it's from Van Helsing, and isn't he the one that fights Godzilla? And he goes, no, he fights Dracula. And then she goes, he's the tall one, right? And he goes, no, that's Godzilla. And I just... love that scene because it was just such a good dialogue. It reminded me of something out of like Ghostbusters, you know, like the whole there's the last of the petty cash kind of thing, you know, just those lines that kind of just saying them, it's not that funny, but in like the context of the film and how the scene plays, it's like super clever and very fun. And I don't know, just little things like that I really, really enjoyed. And just the dialogue in general, it just helped push the film very well, and it made it flow real good. So, big props on that.
Yeah. Also, we should mention, like, I brought it up last week when I was explaining them, but there's, like, subset movies going on in this movie, especially with the dad. Like, the dad is a cop, and he's got a partner, and the partner's kind of like a... wisecracking, jokey kind of dude. And it turns into like a buddy cop film where they're trying to find like who's killing these people. And it turns out to be the Wolfman. But they go through the motions too of having their own film within this kids movie about just being cops and having to deal with like the unknown and like this paranormal stuff, and they don't believe it until they do because it's right in front of their faces. And then the mom even has her own thing where like she's in an argument with her husband, who is the cop, and he's like never around, but he's like, you know the job, baby. That's what you signed up for.
And he says about it in such a douchey way.
Yeah. God. She's about to leave. She's like going through her own struggles of like, I need to leave this marriage. And
no, he said something like, you know what the receipt said on the bag or something like that. Like, oh my God, what a dick.
But they have some cool interactions, especially with the Wolfman, because the Wolfman is a human, and he shows up in the police district, and he's like, "You need to lock me up. I'm going to kill people. You got to lock me up." So he ends up getting taken, or no, they beat him up, right? He like pulls a gun. He starts and then beating him up.
Yeah, because he's they like slam him down on the table, and he sees the full moon and just starts going berserk and starts. It's an awesome scene. He starts like picking up and throwing them through windows and stuff, and he eventually grabs a gun and just starts blasting it in the air point blank style, and it was just like lock me up, and then one of the officers shoots him like 3 times.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so they think he's dead.
Right, and they bring him in the coroner's truck, where he proceeds to turn into Wolfman and kill the coroner. And the whole time the police officer are investigating this murder. But man, the Wolfman transformation scenes were pretty cool.
Very like, artistically done.
Yeah, and it's not the greatest transformation of the Wolfman. You've seen it better in other films, but sure. Still pretty cool. Like, he gets the hair and his face turns into a snout and his hands, you know, get the claws. And I think there's one point, the best one is when he's in the telephone booth and he's calling the police and he's like, you need to go to the Dracula residence. He's going to do something. And then he turns into the werewolf and it's pretty cool. Yes. And the werewolf looks pretty menacing. Kind of got that face that's just stuck. Like, it's not very... it doesn't have a lot of motion in his face. It's like he's wearing a mask, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, they didn't do a lot of articulation on him. And, I mean, I think the one that kind of felt real complete was the Black Lagoon monster. I mean, when you get to see the close-up of him, like the gills and everything moving in his eyes, like, it was super well done. It looks so nice. And then definitely Frankenstein with his design. I mean, he's wearing the typical Frankenstein clothes, and even his face is about the same, but I like the incisions and stuff they did over his forehead. Like, they just kind of plastered that skin on top of his face. Yeah. Like, it looked really, really good. And even the actor did a great job of kind of not like writing. I mean, I guess he sort of wrote that line between being the normal Frankenstein and kind of being a little more of a caring one. I guess you could say, at least I felt that way. It wasn't too cheesy, maybe in some scenes, but overall it was well done. It made you really, really like his character, especially his kind of redemption at the end. But no, I felt like all of them looked good. Didn't get to see a whole lot of the Mummy. I was a little surprised that he didn't show up a little bit more. Like, it felt like the other ones got a little bit more time than he did, but he did get probably the coolest death scene.
Yeah, yeah. He's chasing them. They're in a car. He latches onto the car, and the cool kid takes his bow and arrow, and which he stole from gym class, and ties part of the bandage from the Mummy's leg onto an arrow and then shoots it into a tree while the Mummy's hanging onto the back of the car and starts unwinding him. And then he says, the cool kid says, "Smell you later, bandage breath," or something like that.
A plus. I love it. See, you have a death scene like that, which you would expect in a kid's film. It's not very violent. He's just, you know, made of bandages and that's it. He just unravels. But then you have the fat kid grabbing an officer's shotgun and blasting the swamp monster.
Yes.
Like, blood packets and everything. It is so epic.
Yeah, and he does it well. First, he grabs the shotgun and he tries to get into the shop where the two bullies are. They're, like, ducking behind the counter. And he's like, "Let me in, let me in." And they're, like, they're shaking their heads no. And he turns around, he blows away the swamp thing, and then the kids come out and they're like, "Whoa, way to go, fat kid!" And then he turns to him, he cocks the shotgun, and he's like, "My name is Horace."
Still, there was another. I kind of halfway thought that, is he going to turn the shotgun on them? Not to shoot them, but just to scare them.
Yeah.
I kind of thought maybe that would happen, but that was good. That fit his character.
Right.
Just cocking it in front of him. That was classy.
Honestly, Fat Kid, MVP of the movie. Really, if you break it down, like the cool kid does cool stuff. Like he takes out the Dracula girls, but who are just walking slowly towards him. But Fat Kid does a few things. One, he kicks Wolfman in the nards, where he then discovers that Wolfman has nards.
Because they have a discussion about that earlier in the film. I can't even remember. They were talking like he, they were having a discussion whether or not he had nards or not because of if he wore pants or not. It was a strange conversation, but it was kind of entertaining. But go ahead.
Then this is in the house that Dracula owns, where they're trying to find the amulet. they run away. They find all the things. They hit a trap door. And find an amulet, and then once they find the amulet, Dracula's got the main kid by the scruff of the shirt, and he's, you know, about to kill him, and fucking Fat Kid takes out a piece of pizza out of his he takes it out of his pocket, and it's in tinfoil, and he unwraps it and then slaps it against Dracula's face. And Dracula's like, "Gah!" and starts to burn his face. Because the pizza, of course, had extra garlic on it.
I forgot about that. Oh, my God. He just pulled a piece of pizza out of his pocket. Yeah.
Because he's the fat kid. Why wouldn't he carry a piece of pizza around?
Of course he would. Oh, Jesus.
And then he shoots Swamp Thing. So Fat Kid really, you know, carried kind of the team in terms of...
Yeah.
Of muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. I think he did probably the most damage out of all of them because he did damage the three monsters. I don't even think the main kid really took anyone out. But probably one part that was interesting, like when they finally get to the point where they have his older sister reading the scroll thing, what the thing in German, and the German guy's there interpreting it for her. So he's saying what is German, and she repeats it, but she does it, but the portal doesn't open, and then we find out apparently she's not a virgin.
So yeah, because Joey JoJo Jr. doesn't count.
Exactly. But then the littlest kid looks up at the little girl and says, asks the German guy, is she a virgin? Oh, man.
I hope so.
What
if
kinda,
what if she read it? Nothing happened.
I see. That's the thing, man. No way that would be in a movie now. Like, oh God, I just felt so uncomfortable for a couple seconds. I was like, thank God that scene's over. But I will say, her scene when she finally does read the. Yeah, she does end up reading the scroll, and the vortex opens, and she's like hiding behind this park bench, and the Frankenstein is right there, like she's holding on to his hand, and she's like, "Don't go, don't go," and he's like, "Bye," whatever her name is, and oh my God, I had a little tear. I in all honesty, that hit me in the feels, and like he's going and she throws her favorite stuffed animal Fluffy or something like that, and he catches it and he's just like, bye. And oh my God, it hurt. Yeah. And I think that says something about I'm an emotional person. I really get into when I actually sit and watch one, I can really get into them. And that scene alone just kind of like sealed the deal. Easily, like put it over off the charts for me, and just being able to get all those emotions in one film that on paper probably shouldn't have been able to do that, and it did.
Yeah,
and it's
credit for setting up Frankenstein so well. Like, you wouldn't have had that feeling without that cheesy ass montage.
Definitely, No, you and Wally both did not oversell it. I mean, if at all, probably undersold just how good this movie really was. And I do believe, I mean, granted the very controversial stuff you could say, or it is a solid film that I would easily recommend to anyone to watch, with just maybe a slight disclaimer, maybe, that there's a couple of interesting things in there. But that's probably all I would say, because I don't think any of it's bad. It's not like, you know, something that's just so horrific that no one would ever say or do ever, to an extent. But it's just things that kind of add a little more character. It's a time capsule. And that's really fun to go and look at. Because in some ways, a bunch of kids run around yelling chicken shit and kicking each other in the balls. So that's kind of what kids probably do right now. You know, that's what I did as a kid. And, you know, it felt kind of cool living back in that time again. And but
I think what I enjoy about this is that they give so much respect to these old classic monsters.
Like, absolutely.
They all show their strengths, even though they're just lame ass monsters that we've all seen a million times. But they all have their scenes where they're shown like, oh shit, like, yeah, they are fucking scary. Like, one of them that sticks out is when Dracula is walking towards the girl while she's reading. And the cops are coming after him. And he's just dead-eye locked on her. And he's walking slowly towards her. And the cops come and he, like, breaks one's neck. And then throws the other one away. And then, like, kicks one down. And he's just, the whole time he's staring at the girl walking towards her. Like oh, shit, Dracula can fucking throw down, dude.
Yeah.
And then he gets to her and he like squeezes her cheeks and he says, give me the amulet. And then he lifts her up just by her cheeks, you know, with one arm. And you're fearing for her. And that's when Frankenstein shows up and he's like, no, you don't touch girl.
He even calls her a bitch to her face.
Yeah, he does. He calls the little 6-year-old girl a bitch. He's like, give me the amulet, you bitch.
Damn.
But yeah, it's a fun movie. I'm glad I watched it again this late. But man, I remember watching it over and over as a kid. I loved it so much. It's just kids I could relate to, you know?
Sure.
Put myself in their shoes. If you have anyone around, any kids around the age of like, you know, 10 to 13, show them this movie, because it's badass. It's like, it's as badass as you can get while like not being, you know, too over the top.
Yes, completely agree. I think any, you know, preteen or whatever, hell, teenager, I think I would, you know, I'd say preteen on up, I think you'll have a great, great time with this film. You'll get something different out of it. The kids will just enjoy watching these guys accomplish this goal in a really neat and satisfying way, and you'll get that same experience, plus some interesting things that we'll never, ever see again in a motion picture in theaters by a big Hollywood studio. So you get something out of all of it. Everyone wins. But it's just a solid, solid movie, and I highly recommend it. I probably, as I said earlier, if I was going to rank it, I probably would put it under RoboCop for our list. Like, it's just...
Wow.
I personally think that it's a... Even though the other films below it are way more money, of course, they made way more money as well, more talent behind them, everything. Like, I don't give a shit. You just need to make me feel something. That's all you've got to do. I don't care if it's $1 million or $500 million is in your budget. Just make me feel something and keep me interested. Even just a small plot of like five little kids taking on some old ass Universal monsters. You know, just make it interesting and worth my time. And they did that within Aces. And good job on them.
Yep. And it's going to be, well, actually not so much of a tonal switch to our next movie, which is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. Similar in the sense that it's going to be a group of kids, well, not kids, teenagers, that are fighting a monster, that monster being Freddy Krueger. We're hitting the same kind of theme another week in a row, but hey, both fun movies. I'm excited to hear what you think about this next movie.
I'm pumped, and I've never seen any of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, not even the remake. And I'm trying to decide, would you recommend us to watch 1 and 2 prior to 3, or you think we could just jump straight into 3 and be good?
I don't think you need to bother with 2. If you want to get the basic premise of what Freddy is, then maybe watch 1, because it explains him. But I could just sum it up really quickly if you like.
Go for it.
So there was a child molester named Freddy Krueger, and the town found out he was molesting the children, and they burn him. They burn him alive in the basement of the school.
Oh.
And then he comes back to life. That's why his face is all scarred. He comes back and haunts the children's dreams and kills them in their dreams, where if he kills them in their dreams, they're generally dead in real life. And that's pretty much the premise of Freddy Krueger and who he is. But you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't watch Nightmare on Elm Street, because it's a classic horror movie. And there's some really cool practical effects, namely the way Johnny Depp dies in the first film.
Mm. Interesting. I think I might sit down and watch it prior. I mean, as you said, it's a classic. I know Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is a classic because of the kills and just the overall story of these kids trying to take down Freddy, and you know, and with so many neat rules of him being in your dreams and them having to find ways of fighting him and bring him into real life. Like, it just sounds great. I can't wait to watch it. I think
it's a lot of the audience wondering to themselves, are they dreaming right now? You know?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So that's a big theme in the Freddy movies. And a lot of kids like taking no dose and drinking a lot of coffee, trying to stay awake or keeping each other awake. Yeah, it's cool. I love Freddy. He's one of my favorite of the, he's definitely my favorite of the three. I guess, yeah, what would it be? Three? Four? Three? Freddy, yes. Mike Myers, and Jason.
Sure, he's the best. Sure. Would you put a Leatherface in there, or did he not quite get to that level?
I don't think he got to that level, but he's up there.
Okay.
He's on like the B tier with Hellraiser and stuff.
Interesting. I like it. Well, if you want to join us, and believe me, you do, we have a great time watching these films, and please join the Just Okay Gamers Discord channel. That's discord.gg/justokgamers. If you have issues getting there, feel free to shoot me an email. And hey, if you've got any questions, comments, concerns, please let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts about any film topic or anything we've talked about or a new film coming out. Some people have been asking us about if we're going to watch the new Venom movie and discuss that one. And I've got to say, I'm intrigued. When I first heard about it, I did not know if I really wanted to sit down and watch it. But honestly, the back and forth I've heard from critics, it's kind of got me interested in trying to figure out where I lie in that spectrum. If I'm going to be it's pretty good, or it's a piece of crap, or maybe I'll be more in the middle. Who knows? Tom Hardy's a cool actor, so I'm definitely interested in that. Have you seen it already, Guido?
No, I haven't. I figured I'd just wait until it came out on home video.
Sure. No, I don't blame you. I don't know if I would go out and see it. Maybe I'll try to find a cam if I can find a good quality one. But hey,
watch cams.
Either case, you don't watch.
I mean, watch pirated movies, fine, but don't watch the ones that are filmed on a handheld video recorder in the movie theater.
Some of them can be done very well.
No, and you kind it's of get not. That. It takes away. Yes. No. Don't even say some of them are good. They're bad.
No. Hey, I kind of feel like it's a step below actually being there. Because sometimes being in the theater is not a fun experience. And at least I can pause it and maybe make fun of someone's head keep bopping up and down. No, I agree. It's not nearly as good. I can tolerate it because I can kind of get what I want out of the film. Because normally if I'm watching a cam, it's because it's a movie I know I'm not going to care that much about. Although, sometimes you can always be surprised. You know? Yeah. So you got a good point, Guido. But hey, if you want to share your thoughts or anything, shoot us an email at justokmovies@gmail.com. Please follow us on Twitter at justokmovies. And I've got to say, guys, your feedback and everything has been so wonderful. And I would love your help, if you don't mind, going on the iTunes and giving us a rating. I would greatly appreciate it because we definitely want more people to know about the pod. And that is probably the best and most inexpensive way to do that other than telling a friend. So go on there, leave 5 stars. And hey, if you have a comment or concern and you don't want to leave like a 1-star review, let us know. I'd love to hear your feedback on how we can make this pod better. But if you want to give 5 stars, please, it would help us greatly. And I appreciate you all every week. Love you all. And I hope you take care. Join us next week for Nightmare on Elm Street 3. And you all have a good rest of your evening. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.